Fifth case, Glasser v. Wound Care. Mr. Black.
May it please the Court, my name is Paul Black. I represent Carol Glaser in this, she is the relator in this quitam action against the defendants, Wound Care Consultants. I don't have a great deal to add to the briefs, but I would like to take a moment to bring the Court's, focus the Court's attention on that part of the District Court's opinion where I think the error lies. It's in the short appendix at page 6, at page 2 of the District Court's December 3, 2007 order, right in the middle of the page. The Court adopted the defendant's misstatement of the section 3730E4 bar, and it stated, the defendants contend that the plaintiff either based her allegations on a public disclosure or was not an original source. The Court then went on to find that the plaintiff did not base her allegations on a public disclosure. The District Court said the plaintiff affirms in her affidavit that her Second Amendment complaint is based solely on personal knowledge of her experience with the defendants and Medicaid. So the District Court found that...
You know what? Don't need to hear about what the District Court did. This is a de novo review. And furthermore, District Courts don't make findings in this kind of a procedural context, so that's an inappropriate terminology. Why don't you just tell us why you have we have jurisdiction here?
Well, the Court has jurisdiction because the elements of the three elements of the bar were not established.
And it's your burden.
That's correct.
To show that there is jurisdiction. In other words, that this does not fall within that jurisdictional bar.
And the relator carried her burden. She filed an affidavit that she had no knowledge of the audit in question. Her attorney filed the same affidavit or similar affidavit. And there was no evidence to the contrary that she based her allegations on a public disclosure, and the District Court found that she did not. And under Matthews, all three elements of the jurisdictional bar must be present in order to bar, in order to divest the court of jurisdiction.
I thought there was an assertion of attorney-client privilege here so that we really don't know what the source of her information was, because she refused to answer those questions.
She asserted the attorney-client privilege.
And it was kind of a strange use of the privilege.
It was indeed an offensive use of the privilege.
The burden, so you usually lose in that situation.
Nevertheless, that goes to whether or not she was an original source of her allegations.
It goes to what her allegations were based on, which is the first set of inquiries. The first inquiry is whether this was a public disclosure, and I think as a matter of law it was. The second question was whether her case is based on information from the public disclosure, and we just don't know. All we know is that had no familiarity with her billing records until the attorney came to her and gave her information that she's not telling us what it is. That would form the basis for a QI-TAM action under the False Claims Act.
That's speculation.
That's just a failure of proof.
You're speculating. Actually, the proof is her affidavit and the affidavit of her attorney that neither one of them had any knowledge of what the defendants contend was the public disclosure. That is the only evidence as to what she did not base her allegations on.
Doesn't that contradict the deposition testimony and the assertion of the privilege?
No, I don't believe that it does at all. She knew that she was she knew that she had been cared for by Wound Care in a nursing home without the supervision of a physician. Those are the allegations upon which her QI-TAM complaint is based. She could have gotten her information from 1,000 sources, but so long as she did not get her information from what they contend is a public disclosure, which with which we take issue, the jurisdictional bar is not present. And the only evidence in the record is the affidavit of the relator and of her attorney that she based her allegations solely on her personal knowledge and experience with the defendants.
Well, actually, her position at her deposition was that she based her allegations on information she got from the lawyer who came to her, but prior to that, she had no idea.
I don't believe she said that she based any information. She received legal advice from her lawyer.
She based her allegations on information that the lawyer brought to her. She had no knowledge of any sort of foundational facts pertaining to a false claim until the lawyer came to visit her in the nursing home and suggested that she might have such a claim, right?
No.
And that's what we know from the deposition, and that the attorney-client privilege was then asserted.
No, I don't believe that. That's what she testified to. That's at page 6-7 of the short appendix.
She said she was unaware of the source of this information, and the information is protected by the attorney-client privilege. That's on page 6 of the appendix.
She knew that she had been treated without supervision by nurse practitioners that work for the defendants. And that and she knew that other patients could have the same. And she could have received advice from her attorney that the defendants should not have been performing these services in the nursing facility and billing as outside vendors, because the nursing facility was already receiving payment for these services. She received legal advice from her attorney, but the evidence is that she based her allegations solely on her personal knowledge and her experience with the defendants.
Well, she declined to reveal what her attorney told her, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Well, isn't that what the judge decided the case on, basically?
I think he decided that that meant she couldn't be an original source. An original source is only one of the three requirements for the jurisdictional bar to apply. All three requirements have to be present. There has to be a public disclosure, and she has to have. There has to be evidence that she based her allegations on a public disclosure. In this case, there is no evidence that, as a matter of fact, that this audit was publicly disclosed.
Well, that's not required.
This
case really turns on is the based on, the interpretation of based on. Do you think it's time for the circuit to bring itself within the majority rule? We've got the minority rule on what that particular statutory phrase means, right?
Well, I believe that the circuit analysis on a correct reading of the False Claims Act. At any rate,
why don't you defend that? I mean, we're being asked as an alternative to overrule our case law on this and bring our circuit into conformity with the majority rule, which interprets that language differently to mean that the based on language means the allegations need to be similar to or covering the same set of facts and circumstances or a similar set of facts and circumstances, but not actually derived from.
Well, let me say this. Even if you were to adopt the majority rule, her allegations still would not have been based upon what they contend a public disclosure here, because what they contend is a public disclosure was an inquiry by the government wherein the government said, hey, there are these 50 claims that were submitted by one of your nurse practitioners, a guy by the name of Paul Schroth, and he billed under Dr. Miller's billing number. And if he's billing incident to the services of Dr. Miller, then those claims are improper because you can't do that in a nursing home. And the defendants told Administrar Federal, no, that's not what happened. Paul Schroth only had, Paul Schroth didn't have his own personal identification number, and that is the reason that he used Dr. Miller's. So what they contend is a public disclosure wasn't a public disclosure at all. They lied to Administrar Federal and said something entirely different from what the relator has alleged in her complaint, which is that all of the defendant's services performed by nurse practitioners in a nursing facility have been false, all of them, for years. So even if you were to apply this majority rule that, well, gee, the public disclosure, if it's public, it was similar to what she alleged, it wasn't similar. It was very, very different. It was a lie. It was the opposite of what she has alleged. I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I have any time left.
Oh, sorry. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Adams?
May it please the court, my name is Jennifer Westerhouse Adams. I'm with the firm of Barnes & Thornburg in Indianapolis. I represent the defendants' appellees, wound care consultants, Melissa Miller and Stephen Miller. This is a key TAM action under the False Claims Act in which the government declined to intervene, and it was properly dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Section 3730E4A of the False Claims Act bars actions that are based upon certain enumerated public disclosures. The relator has the burden of proof as to subject matter jurisdiction. This circuit's decision in United States and Matthews versus Bank of Farmington articulates the test for subject matter jurisdiction in this case. First, have the allegations been publicly disclosed? Second, did the relator base her claims upon that public disclosure? And third, is the relator otherwise an original source? Each and every component of jurisdiction must be present. Here, the relator failed to carry her burden as to any of the components. In particular, I will focus on the based upon component. Here, there's no question there was a public disclosure. There was a Health and Human Services audit of the defendant's Medicare claims, and in particular, the Medicare claims that were submitted incident to the services of a physician. This was the core of the relator's complaint. Second, there was an inquiry by a governmental employee acting on behalf of the Department of Health and Human Services. This inquiry by the responsible official for those Medicare claims is a governmental investigation, as Matthews squarely held. Second, the relator has to demonstrate that her allegations were not based upon the public disclosure, and here the relator failed to carry that burden. In response to interrogatories requesting the basis for her allegations, the relator stated that she had no knowledge of the information underlying her claims, stated that she'd gotten all of her information from her attorney, and indicated that she was claiming the attorney-client privilege for that information. In her deposition, she did the same thing. She stated that she had no knowledge of any alleged fraud until her lawyer contacted her, and she claimed the attorney-client privilege for all of the information she received from her attorney. She did not give any other sort of affirmative response about the basis for her claims until responding to the defendant's motion to dismiss. At that point, she submitted an affidavit that said something different from her discovery responses. She had refused to disclose the basis in her discovery responses previously, but in her affidavit, she stated that she based her claims on her personal knowledge and the advice of her counsel. The Gear case in this circuit held that a self-serving affidavit that talks only of personal knowledge is insufficient to carry the relator's burden on the based upon prong. In the Gear case, this court specifically held that because the relator had failed to carry this prong, The court found that it was based upon a public disclosure.
Was that based on an application of the sham affidavit rule or something
else? I don't know, Your Honor. Mr. Black also spoke about the affidavit of the relator's attorney. This was not submitted until surreply in this case. This was not submitted until a juncture at which the defendant's appellees had no opportunity to address, challenge, or rebut that supposed evidence. It also stopped short of being conclusive in that it stated only that the attorney was not aware of any audit of defendant's Medicare claims. It didn't say anything else about what they may have been based upon.
Again, and that affidavit basically made the attorney a fact witness.
Yes, it did, Your Honor.
As opposed to representative counsel, which would have opened the door to depositions and piercing the claim of privilege and all kinds of additional stuff, right?
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor. Fortunately, we didn't have to reach that. The district court does not appear to have even considered that affidavit. It doesn't appear in the district court's order in any way. Because the relator failed to carry her burden on this based upon prong, she otherwise has to demonstrate that she's an original source of the information underlying her allegations. And here, the same facts that indicate that she could not carry her burden, that she had not based her claim upon a public disclosure, prevents her from being an original source. She's precluded from original source status, meaning that she has direct and independent knowledge of the information underlying her claims because she got all of her information, as she admitted, from her attorney. Because that was mediated by a third party, she could not be an original source.
Well, we wouldn't get to the original source inquiry without first passing through the public disclosure and based on...
That's correct, Your Honor.
...hurdles. You concede that, right? Because the original source section or subsection of the statute is an exception to the jurisdictional exclusion, right?
Your Honor, we believe that the Matthews case does dictate that this court should look at all three prongs. In this case, it doesn't have to. There's no reason that it should because the relator has plainly not carried her burden that she did not base her allegations upon the public disclosure. Because the relator failed to carry her burden as to any of the three prongs of the Matthews test, she failed to establish that subject matter jurisdiction was present over her claims. As a result, the district court correctly dismissed her case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction. I'm happy to entertain any questions the court may have.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you very much.
The case will be taken under advisement, and we move to the